Introduction to the Mahayana Text. Sharp Weapon Wheel. Part 2. The absence of inherent self-nature in persons is established through seeing that each of them is the composite of the five components, namely form, feeling tone, identification, augmentation, and conclusive consciousness. These five factors operating together generate the deluded impression of there being people who really exist in and of themselves. However, when these five factors and all other phenomena are examined, we see that they arise in dependence on other factors. There are no self-existing entities to be found anywhere. All phenomena, including the five components, arise from causes. They have a beginning, a middle, and an end. Due to this dependence on factors of creation, maintenance, and destruction, phenomena are never independent. To take them as such is the habit of the ego self. I am real, apart, just me. And similarly, this tree, this apple, this stone is real, apart, and just itself. This misguided and misguiding approach misidentifies appearances and instantiates the fundamental duality of self and other, subject and object, which drives all the confusion and suffering of samsara. With this unawareness of the functional ground or basis of experience, there is no sense of the true status of what is occurring. With this, there arises the sense of self and other, both of which are taken to be truly existing. This belief in the inherent existence of phenomena, including ourselves, is maintained by directing the energy of the mind towards the constructive activity of substantiation. We assume that the objects we encounter, including ourselves, are self-defined in their thingness by an essence and substance which is their personal basis. Thus, they appear to be grounded in themselves, of themselves, and so we are blind to the fact that their ground is, in fact, emptiness. Emptiness is not a subtle metaphysical essence. The term emptiness does not refer to a something, to a refined substance out of which appearances are made. Rather, emptiness is a shorthand term, pointing to the absence of inherent existence in everything, including emptiness. In no place, and at no time, in either samsara or nirvana, can even one truly autonomous entity be found. Thus, the term emptiness indicates that all that can ever be experienced is devoid of the least independent existence. The whole is undivided. It is not the sum of its parts, as there are no parts. The whole is empty and simultaneously full. For this reason, emptiness is beyond concepts, and so we require meditation to open us to how it is. The grasping at existence, at entities, which blocks our awakening to the fact of emptiness, is called dagjin in Tibetan. Dag usually indicates I, the first person singular, but here It indicates the belief in the singularity or unique specificity of just this specific entity. It is this and no other, separate and able to be considered as an independent something. Jin indicates grasping at and holding on to. Under the deluding power of duality, we grasp at entities and come to rely on them as if they truly existed. This becomes the frame of reference within which we pass our lives. Cutting this grasping at entities having inherent existence is the task of Dharma practice. When we grasp at entities, both the grasper and the grasped at are mere ideas, devoid of essence and substance. Since there is no actual duality between self and other, all our grasping is just a dog chasing its own tail. When the open ground, the source, is ignored in favour of what appears, it is as if there is an either-or choice, and on choosing appearance over openness, the non-duality of appearance and the ground is lost touch with. Appearance arises as subject and object, self and other, and neither is independent of the other. The self is always a work in progress, forming and reforming according to the resources available to it. This ceaseless endeavour of maintenance involves options, selections, and our own conscious and not so conscious biases. The subject chooses some items and not others, while each item seems to choose some subjects and not others. Just as we can choose bits of items or objects, so items choose or evoke bits of me. On the sight of a person deemed by me to be beautiful, the erotic aspect of the self is awakened, often to no purpose. Desire and aversion, hopes and fears, are all evoked by the seeming provocation of the other. This is a functional or aesthetic provocation arising from the display of specific aspects of their potential. I take the aspects I encounter to be meaningful and definitive of the total object or person, and then feel provoked by how I have taken them to be. In truth, there is no provoking other and no provoked self. Yet, within the dream of duality, the qualities of the other impact me, often without my wishing it, and perhaps even without my registering the impact. Believing that I have a body, I am subject to the 8 great fears: fire, water, earth, air, elephants, snakes, thieves, and kings. I need to breathe, drink, eat and sleep, travel and rest. To gain the resources for this, I have to engage with the environment and manage variations in supply of items and in the fads of the culture. I am dependent on so many people and things in so many ways, and yet I see myself as a part, separate, autonomous, independent. The disowned other, all that is taken to be non-self, cannot be completely rejected as it is needed for survival, yet it can be and is ignored, denied, and interpreted so that, although I functionally rely on it to support my sense of identity, I can still hold it to be quite apart and other. To maintain myself, I need to control the factors which impinge on me, and yet I cannot. I cannot control the appearance and intention of others. I cannot even control my own responses, which often arise before I am aware of having a choice. The subject is basically space, and so easily fills with transient aspects of wind, fire, water, and earth. Space is non-impacted. It is always present within us as the Avaduti central channel or middle way. But the other elements are always moving in relationship. They impact and are impacted. We walk in the hills and are refreshed by the views, the colours, the wind, and by the movement generated in us by the varied angles, textures, and stabilities of the land. Some impacts are sought out and welcomed. Others are enforced like a series of red traffic lights, while others still are merged with, as if they were our own volition. To be sensitive is to be touched and moved. This is necessary for compassion, but it is a tenderness vulnerable to overwhelm and trauma. To defend against it by armour, avoidance, domination, and so on, merely sets subject and object in opposition and maintains the delusion of duality. The most useful protection comes from not taking up a position, but from dissolving all positions within the infinity of emptiness. Emptiness is the ground and truth of non-duality, the inclusive whole, free of all splitting and reification. Duality is exclusive, partial, competitive, and conflictual, setting this against that. The part cannot encompass the whole, even though it tries to accumulate more and more bits of the world. Many different descriptions of the patterns of our life energy have evolved over time. For example, the self in its embodiment can be seen to be subject to tendencies of dark and heavy swamp-like sinking, tamas, energetic expansion expressing powerful control, rajas, and avoidant purity that remains vulnerable to defilement, sattva. This has a parallel description in terms of the tempers, the doshas, vata, pitta, and kapha, which can be in balance internally and externally or not. Vata indicates the influence of space and wind, the movement of air. It is enlivening. Pitta indicates the influence of fire and water. It is balancing. Kapha indicates the influence of water and earth. It is settling. Dosha indicates fault or disease, since the dynamic nature of these tendencies means that they are rarely balanced, either in themselves or as a collection of forces. Our loss of ease or dis-ease arises from their conflicts and contradictions. As long as the individual ignores their actual ground, these imbalances in energy will cause problems in body, voice, and mind. Energy manifests as the forms of the world of which we are a part. Our individual identity is dependent on both selecting and encountering aspects of the field of manifestation. Since this field is ever shifting, as are our moods and tendencies, our identity is inherently unstable. There are so many ways of describing the body, yet all seem to point to it as being a dynamic system of communication. It is not a fixed entity. The breath that sustains it manifests as speech, as connectivity, linking words according to grammar and semantics to form patterns that can be comprehended by someone else. The unpredictability of our behaviours lies in the diversity of possibilities inherent in our potential. We are not a singular self, but a multiplicity of possibilities, each of which is an aspect or mode of what we call ourselves. Some aspects are primarily receptive, registering what has happened to me. Others function to interpret and evaluate what has occurred. Further aspects may formulate a response and organize its expression. Hence, the aspect of our self, which is evoked by the impact of interaction, may not be the aspect of self which manifests to generate the response. For example, my vulnerable self aspect feels hurt when you reject me. Then, my defensive aspect concludes that you are horrible, which activates my revengeful aspect, allowing me to act in a way that will hurt you. End of part 2. From the book Finding Freedom, introduced and translated by James Lowe. Part 2 of 5 parts, read by Wendy, March 2024.